So, as a wrestling fan, do you just like flippy shit in chair spots? Is that what it
Oh,
is, or ladder
jeez.
spots? Because that's basically what you just told me. As a fan, suspend your disbelief, don't be analytical, and just enjoy the ride.
What's wrong with that?
Ah, damn it, Christy showed up again. I hate when that happens. There's nothing wrong with that per se. It's just you can't expect everybody just to put their critic in their pocket and just accept everything however it's displayed. That's because some stuff is just intellectually insulting.
That's fair, but I mean, we look at this through rose-colored glasses as well. Because if you go back on the network, you watch some of that Attitude Era shit. It
Oh,
was a lot
shit.
of hot garbage, man. It
Oh,
was a lot.
I agree. I'm not gonna rose-colored shit. Like, if it's bad, it's bad. I'll tell you that. I'll even tell you that about Japanese shows. Like, as much as I love that, if it's a bad show, I will tell you it's a bad show.
Well. But I think sometimes, man, we get too analytical as fans because of the internet and the dirt sheets and stuff like that. We think we know more than we actually do, and I think we're a little too critical. And sometimes we forget that at the end of the day, the only reason we're doing this is because we started out as fans. At some point in time, we were fans, you know? And I
That's a
would like to
fair
think we
argument.
still are fans.
You can think that if you want to.
Yeah,
It's a good
because I mean,
argument, though.
yeah, because I mean, there's bad shit, of course, man. There's a lot of bad out there, but there's also a lot of good out there. And you've got a lot more access to everything nowadays. And I think that's cool. And I also think that wrestling is on a precipice of a boom period. Because if you look throughout the history of professional wrestling, the booms have always coincided with technology booms. You know what I mean? So, like in
True.
the 50s, when TV first got popping.
Because my only retort back to that is I saw where you were going, and I was just going to say, but learning how to analyze and accept the bad as being bad makes you appreciate the moments of good even more. So if you it there's two ways street. You can't just accept everything and just take it for what it is, because then you can't differentiate between what's actually bad and what's actually good. If you get critical of things and say they're bad, then when you can just stop and be like, oh no, that was fucking good, like it makes that even more special.
That's fair, but most people don't do that. And they overcriticize stuff. Even if it's good, they still search to find the bad in it.
That's
And
why
I
they're
think
not a professional like
that's.
me.
But oh, Jesus, you certainly are special, Balls. You are special.
I'm the snowflake. That's how that works.
Why should you visit thechairshot.com? Thechairshot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. So fresh and so clean as we embark upon the brand new season of WWE. Anywho, greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the latest, greatest, and new edition of Pod 4. So fresh and so clean, clean. Fighters War is brought to you by the good folks at Chairshot Radio Network in conjunction with thechairshot.com. Folks, always use your head. Also, we've got merch. We've got swag. You should try it out one time, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot to get your very own Chairshot shirt. You can get one right now and say, I had a Chairshot shirt before it was even cool. Again, go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Go get your Chairshot merchandise today, baby. My name is Christopher Platt, and as always, I'm joined by the man, the myth, more myth than legend, Mr. Andrew Balazs.
I'll take that. Myths are fun. Myths are what you build a legacy and a legend off of. So, I'll take the building block. I'm okay with that. I'm not in the game as long as you are, so I can't be the MVP initially. You know what I mean?
Well, you'll never get that spot, man. But we all have a dream, so that's good. That's good. We can all dream.
Exactly. Yes, we can. And it's better if you're dreaming in one of those new chair shot shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/thechairshot. We've got the red, always use your head, and we've got the black with the good chair shot logo with a little nice gold trim around it. So it just pops off real nice, both $19.99 and just beautiful.
Pop. Now, is it forward slash or backslash?
It's the slashy slash. Like, I don't even know anymore. I think it's backslash.
Okay, so I'm just going to say slash then, because I said forward slash like twice. So I'm just going to say slash.
And I'm just trying to remember from the old days of when people actually used to speak out URLs with the www. You know, it's always backslash, as they said. So that's what assuming it still is.
It is forward slash. Thank
Maybe
you.
Maybe it's forward. I don't know.
Oh, good. So you screwed up. So that goes along with the whole MVP thing. So thank you very much, boss. Appreciate it.
You're the MVP. That's what I said.
Fair enough. And also joining us, looking like he just sat on a porcupine, the commissioner of Chair Shot Radio, BC Tunney.
That's a woodpecker, not a porcupine, sir.
Shut the fuck
not
up.
Not even close. Jesus. Came out chairshot.com. Always. Use your head.
All right, let's not insult the woodpecker. Jesus Christ, what the fuck?
What does a porcupine sound like? Like, what noise do they make? Does anybody know?
I am Sir Michael Cole!
What? That's what I got.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Porcupine sound like Michael Cole? That's pretty annoying, so fair enough.
Mm-hmm. So now since we got the commissioner ready to bite our heads off, how about we start with that first question before you kill us?
What does a porcupine do, by the way? Like, what purpose do they serve in the world? Like, you know, bees have a function, even flies and maggots have functions. What function does the porcupine serve, really? Can we just phase him out?
That's what he serves, to give us the first question. Groundhogs tell us the freaking spring or the summer or the fall or the winter, and now porcupines give us questions. So come on, Woody, let's get it going.
You could just say, I don't know either.
It was funnier my way.
Porcupine.
Yeah, porcupines have more hair.
Those are quills, dipshit.
Thank you for the National Geographic update. Da-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na.
NXT TakeOver New Orleans and WrestleMania 34. 10 hours of your favorite WWE superstars. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
Well, when he said favorite, so he's talking to you, Platt.
Clearly. We know. But when you say it like that, 10 hours, it makes me think, God damn, what am I doing with my life, gentlemen? Like, I'm going to have a midlife crisis here on the air, or maybe even an existential crisis on the air. Like, geez, Louise.
God.
So I didn't personally go to the NXT show on Saturday. I know Big Dave. Really? Really? Really?
Yes. Apparently we don't have the Miz thing. So yes, really.
Well, if you want to be that guy, I actually did go to the NXT TakeOver last year at Mania in Orlando, Dick. So there's that.
Oh, well, that's good. Did you at least watch TakeOver on the network? It was free for new subscribers this month.
Yes, I actually did watch TakeOver on the network. Yes.
Well, I'm very proud of you.
I thought NXT was a fantastic show, but every time I watch NXT, I just have a lot of fun watching it. And I think it's partly because I don't keep up with the product on a day-to-day basis or week-by-week basis, so I'm just going into it just to see a fun wrestling match. And they really do have some of the best wrestlers in the world. The atmosphere is always awesome, and it's so different from WWE. But it kind of... I don't even think WWE could get the same atmosphere as NXT. I think it's kind of too big at this particular point in time. But match for match, it was awesome. I love the ladder match. I'm a little biased towards the ladder match because it had my favorite wrestler, my favorite in-ring wrestler to watch right now in it. And everybody performed well. The Omos Black match, I thought that was the best match on the card. Gargano and Ciampa, it's amazing what storyline can do to a wrestling match. You know what I mean, Balls?
Completely. The Gargano-Ciampa storyline added a nice layer that, even if it wasn't the most technically sound match, I still gave that one 5 snowflakes because there was just so much to sink your teeth into. And even the hard-hitting, almost botched moments or sloppy moments still made sense with the story because they hated each other. They wanted to beat the hell out of each other. So when you're pissed off at somebody at that level, you're not trying to make it look pretty. You're just trying to make sure they don't get up.
I solely agree, man. And I think that the botched moments and the mess ups, that adds to the realism of the whole thing. Like, don't get me wrong. I thoroughly enjoyed the Will Ospreay Ricochet match from a few years ago that broke the internet. That was my match of the year at that particular time. But again, okay. The botches, it just, oh, here you go. But it adds to the realism of the match because at the end of the day, it is simulated combat. So I feel as if it helps you to get into the storyline even that much more. But yeah, Almas and Black was my match of the night in my particular opinion.
Technically, it was the best match on the card. I agree with that. And it told a nice story with Zelina and Andrade. Andrade trying to avenge his loss to Black from a couple takeovers ago. There was so much good storytelling with that match. And even Alistair came out a lot more aggressive than usual, so he wasn't his usual calm, calculated, easygoing self. And it caused him to kind of misstep a little bit here or there. And even though I felt like Alistair was off most of that match, that still told a good story and was the most technically proficient one there too. And, you know, I've got a soft spot in my heart for Andrade and Zelina, so it hurt me a little bit to watch them lose.
Oh, they're one of the hottest acts in wrestling, but Balls, as much as I tried to put you over and you made such good points thus far, again, you can't help but to be you. And that's cool. I feel like Aleister Black, his in-ring style is mad aggressive, man. I don't see where you say that. He's a very aggressive in-ring guy, and I think it plays well with his character, which is kind of the, what is he, like a, I don't want to say like a satanic Buddhist, but a, I think that's actually pretty good, a satanic Buddhist.
Well, yeah, because he does like the whole, Muay Thai Krav Maga thing, and if you look at his character is very laid back. He does the SI moonsault, and then he lands it and goes down into like the whole seated position. He's very quiet, he's very reserved, and then even his Black Mass kick, it looks crisp, but it's not like the most aggressive thing. He doesn't even pay attention half the time. He just spins around and knocks you the hell out. So
knocks you the hell out, yes. And his forearms and his kicks, man, they're pretty. They look pretty snug. Obviously, I've never felt one, but they look pretty stiff.
Well, yeah, he's more of a precision fighter to me than he is aggressive, because he reminds me of like Minoru Suzuki in Japan, where if you watch him fight, he doesn't have the power. He's not the bulkiest dude, but if you watch him hit somebody, it looks like it hurts. Like, between him and, like, a bigger guy, muscular guy, like Tomohiro Ishii or Togi Makabe, like, Makabe will hit him, you'd be like, all right, he's a big beefy dude, that probably hurt. But then as soon as Suzuki fires back, you're just like, okay, that looked like it hurt. And that's the same thing with Alistair. Alistair really knows how to just land his strikes in a way that it looks painful.
So how many times did you say those names in the mirror before you got them down, Pat?
2? Suzuki's make motorcycles. Right. That's not hard.
Nobody talking about Suzuki. Come on now.
Tomohiro Ishii? Like, how hard is that?
Yeah, okay. Anywho, before we move on to the main event of the weekend, I just want to say I can't wait to...
Yeah, you said it right. Or Kazuchika Okada.
Mute. Both of you, don't ever interrupt me while I'm trying to segue into the main event, all right? TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Precisely. Use your head and stop interrupting the goddamn MVP. But anywho, I can't wait till Aleister Black gets to the main roster because he's one of the few wrestlers in wrestling that his character is fully actualized. And everything about his character goes with his character. I think his in-ring style even plays into his character. Like, he really knows who he is. And it comes across not only in his promos and everything else in the Goo Goo Gaga, but in his in-ring style as well. So I'm going to be interested to see what happens when he goes up to the main roster, assuming he doesn't just go to 205 Live. But moving on. Obviously, the main event of the weekend, the reason we're here and we're talking about NXT TakeOver is that presumably there was another card later on, which is WrestleMania.
Really?
A little bit, yes.
Wait. Speaking of Mania, hey, Mr. Moderator, who won the Mania Madness?
Daniel Bryan! Yes, indeed! WrestleMania 30.
I believe who could have saw that coming?
I believe it was 68 to 32 percentiles.
Oh, okay. It's closer than I was expecting, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Congratulations to Daniel Bryan for winning this nothing award that you will never even know about.
But it's our inaugural one, just like the Women's Battle Royal.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, there is a superstar tournament going on at thechairshot.com and on Twitter right now. Thanks,
so
Chris.
I want to say, no problem, brother. That's what I'm here for. So I want to say this, and then Balls, I'm going to give you the floor because I feel like this is a topic that we're going to go back and forth about. Obviously, you guys know I was there live for the event. I was in New Orleans, the Den of Iniquity. I kept saying that because I just thought it sounded cool all weekend.
It does sound cool. I'll give you credit there.
Thank you kindly. I thought that they gave us a very entertaining four-hour card of wrestling. The problem being it was 7 hours. I don't really know how you get around that because that seems that that's the new normal now. So other than going back to the back in the day, you remember when they gave us intermissions? Other than that, I don't really know how you solve that problem if they're not going to do the two-day Mania thing. But even if they do the two-day Mania thing, they'll probably have 5 hours of wrestling on each day. So, yeah, let's go back and get some intermissions. The only problem with an intermission is that that'll probably stretch the whole thing to 9 hours, and then we'll just never leave that melon farm.
No, yeah, and oddly enough, I can't argue with that completely because I agree with you that it was like the first, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 hours was actually fun. I thought the show completely peaked at the Rousey Triple H match because Rousey came out hot, and I don't just mean the way she looked. I mean, she came out fast. The match was put together well. She looked really good. She looked like she knew what she was doing. There were fun false finishes. The whole moment with her punching the shit out of Triple H in the corner for a while, that was nice. Actual, to some degree, man-on-woman violence is not normally seen in WWE, so the fact that they felt comfortable enough doing that in this match, that was entertaining. And it may not have been the match I rated the highest, but it was my favorite match of Mania this year, was Rousey, Kurt, Triple H, and Steph, because it was just fun. And it was what pro wrestling is, as just entertainment. And I couldn't really fault it.
And Steph taught a master's class in that match on how to be a heel. Everything she did was just absolutely perfect.
Yep.
From going around to the other side when they're about to get the hot tag and dragging her off the ring, to Triple H keeping the ref distracted and she slams Kurt Angle's head into the ring steps, to when the hot tag was finally made and she was trying to back off and be the cowardly heel. She taught a master's class. Kudos to her. It was a really good old school tag team match. It started out a little slow, and I think that's because of Kurt Angle's limitations in the ring, because, I mean, he does have a broken freaking neck. But it built so nicely. The drama was there. And, yeah, you're absolutely right, Balls. It was an old-school tag team match, and it's exactly what wrestling is about. As far as match of the night, I've got to give that up to Asuka and Charlotte. Those two women went out and stole the show. It was an incredible match. They displayed incredible athleticism, and I'm proud of both of those women. I really am. So congratulations to them.
Match of the night for me went to the triple threat intercontinental match because not because it was work rate or Seth and Finn are supposed to put on good matches. It was Miz that was the star of that match.
Yes.
He actually added so much depth, and the fact that he did the old school heel thing where he scouted his opponents. So he had a beautiful moment where Seth jumped up to do some kind of like springboard, either his knee or something like that. Miz kicks him off the top rope, runs over to Finn. Finn tries to hit him with an enziguri. Miz catches him and then hits him with a dragon screw over the top rope, which I don't even think Miz had a dragon screw in his arsenal. And it was so nice to just be like, just sit there and go, wait, Miz is being the calculated Ric Flair style heel. And it was beautiful to watch him actually make that match fun, because you expected it to be technically solid with Seth and Finn, but we've already seen that match twice in the last 4 weeks on Raw. So how much more can they really do? But Miz added a dynamic to that that was just so nice. And then, much like you said, the last couple hours happened and that just fell off a cliff. I feel like WWE needs to take a page from New Japan. And this isn't
Surprise.
No. It'll logically make sense, and I think you'll agree, because our wonderful owner, Greg DeMarco, and his
friend. The owner of thechairshot.com,
fine.
Not our owner.
Fine. The owner of thechairshot.com, Greg DeMarco, and his best buddy, Patrick O'Dowd, on Outside Interference, brought this up. And that's New Japan. They have 5-6 hour shows too for like Wrestle Kingdom and Sakura Genesis and Dominion. Nobody complains because that card builds. You get the crappy Young Lion match that you know is just garbage. Then you get like a couple tag matches. You get the Never Six Man match, which nobody cares about. And then you slowly get into the matches that matter. If this card was booked differently, if Braun was on earlier with that painfully long, awkward segment of finding a child, it would have been more endearing and people would have been less negative about it, because that was like, what, the third match on the card or the second match from the top? I forget how it went exactly, but it was like semi-main event or very close to the top. And
well, I disagree with that, man. I think they built it well. I just think it didn't execute well. So just being there live, you know, obviously we were hot when the actual show started. So the three-way, we were hot for that. Shout out to The Miz as well. I agree with you. And then Asuka and Charlotte, as far as I'm concerned, they stole the show. So, of course, we were hot for that. And then Ronda and Kurt and that whole melee came out. Everybody was hot. And the crowd in the building seemed to peak at the Daniel Bryan match. So, you know what I mean? And I understand the story they were telling with Daniel Bryan, how they wanted him out of the match so that he could come back in and get the, you know, the hot tag, and then everybody would explode because it's Daniel's big comeback. But that match peaked at the beginning when he first came out, and we were just so excited to see him. Because when it was him on, you know, selling on the side of the ring, and it was just Shane with his weird looking punches versus Sammy and KO, the crowd kind of died. And I don't think we, as a crowd, it never really recovered. Like, it's weird, and I can't really explain it, but there was something missing. And I can't fault them for the way they booked it, because, of course, they would book it like that. Now, moving on later into the card, I can't fault them on that either, because, okay, we start out, so we just get out of we get done with the Cena Undertaker segment. We get done with the Daniel Bryan thing. So you want to kind of bring the crowd down a little bit. So then you come out with the women's match, Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax. The crowd was completely dead for that until the ending, and they popped incredibly hard for Nia, which was actually a really cool moment. Plus, seeing the emotion on her face, I think those tears were pretty legitimate. So I understand what they were saying. So, okay, so you bring the crowd down from what's just happened, give them a minute, catch their breath, and then the next match you're going to hit them with was AJ and Shinsuke. So you're thinking that the crowd's going to be up for that. Unfortunately, the match didn't deliver. It was In the arena, it died after Shinsuke's entrance and then the initial Nakamura, AJ Styles back and forth. After that, the crowd was just not there for it whatsoever, and the match suffered for it, and it died. Now, when I went back and watched it on the network, it actually was a good match. Not a great match, but a good match. And I kind of feel the same way about it that I feel about their clash in New Japan. It was good, not great. I expected more from the two of them. So then you go into that, theoretically, like it didn't work out, but theoretically, so you go into that, you need to bring the crowd back down. So then you go into the Braun and the Bar segment. You got bring the little kid out there. It's a cutesy feel-good moment. Gives you kind of like a palate cleanser. And then you go into the main event. So I can't really fault them for the way that they booked the card. I think they booked the card well. I think just situations and circumstances. And at the end of the day, 7 hours is just a long-ass time to be sitting there. And then, of course, the main event, the crowd just wasn't there for it at all. They didn't even want to give the match a chance, which it kind of pissed me off because I couldn't get into it. I was running on fumes by that time because it's 7 hours, you know. And it was hard for me to get into it. And it was also hard for me to stare away from what was going on in the crowd. I mean, you had multiple beach balls. So anytime watching it on television, if you saw a loud cheer or a loud boo that didn't appear to have anything to do with the match, it's because either a beach ball was thrown and security confiscated it. That was the boo. And then another beach ball appeared, and that was the cheer.
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured, since there was a lot of the crowd reacting to something behind them and not in the match. But I don't know. I feel like if, say, the U.S. title match kicked things off, where they busted their ass in that match, but it was just placed in a position where nobody completely cared, and then Jinder winning isn't exactly a feel-good moment for the crowd, especially beating Rusev after the crowd popped pretty hard for what we expected to be the accolade and possibly the finish, and then we got swerved with Jinder. And that was also kind of like a continuous thread with this Mania, where it's like what the conventional wisdom kind of was telling the smarks and the internet fans, like it was leading to that point, and then Vince just decided to book it exactly the opposite way. It felt like screw with people. Like,
I get that that's because
the way it kind of came off.
I get that. I felt the same way because I think the only match I actually got right was Braun and Nicholas. I didn't know Nicholas was going to be there, but yeah, I think that's the only match I got right. So it did feel that way. Like he was just trying to swerve us and just, you know, to fool with the smarks. But the U.S. title match, the triple threat for the SmackDown titles, the Braun Strowman bar thing, the Alexa Bliss Nia matches, I felt like those matches served as palate cleansers because there was such hot action that came that preceded that and was going to follow that. So I think those matches served their point. I expected more out of the SmackDown title match. I'm a little disappointed because the New Day and the Usos have been busting their ass for so long. I felt like they deserved a Mania moment to shine, even though we all knew that the Bludgeon Brothers were going to go over and go over strong, which they did. But those matches, that's all they were there for on the card. I can't fault the way they booked it. It just didn't work out the way they anticipated. And nobody saw AJ and Shinsuke being a dud. How did the match come across watching it live on television?
Same. Where okay. The crowd was not into it, so it came off worse than it actually was. But I agree, it was a decent match. And it also, there were a lot of hints sprinkled in there that Shinsuke was going to turn anyway, because he didn't do his good vibrations kick. When he broke with AJ in the corner, he didn't put his head on his chest and wiggle his arms. And there was no fun about Shinsuke's character, which harkens back to old Shinsuke in New Japan, because he started off as a cold, calculated, like just badass heel who beat the shit out of people. When he created chaos, it was a heel stable, and then he slowly became more eccentric and tweenerish because the fans accepted him. So I think that was the problem, is that New Japan Shinsuke already had that validation of being a badass, and WWE Shinsuke was just the funny Asian guy with the violin song. And now we're going to finally get to that part of Shinsuke where you validate him as an actual threat and an actual badass.
I get that, man, because, yeah, in New Japan, it's ironic now, and it's kind of hard to believe for some of the American fans, I'm sure, but he was seen as, you know, technically one of the best wrestlers in the world, but he had the personality of a raisin. Then he went to AAA, and, you know, he spent some time down there in Mexico, and then he created this whole new persona about himself, and he just oozes charisma. I'm here for heel Shinsuke. They've dropped the ball with booking him, period. WWE, they just have. He's the king of strong style, so he just should have been mowing through melon farmers and been a legit badass. Plus, he shouldn't have been on television every week. I feel as if he should have got the Brock Lesnar treatment. Not saying we only see him every 4 months, but he didn't need to be on every SmackDown, and he certainly didn't need to be talking on every SmackDown, because that takes away from the mystique. Plus, anytime you give America fans to remember, oh yeah, this guy's foreign, that's probably not the best idea. But I'm all on board for Heelsuke, man. The turn was displayed awesome. Like, the way they did the turn, it was awesome. I can't fault it whatsoever. So I'm looking forward to that, but I'm sure we're going to get to that a little bit later on. What are some other thoughts you had about Mania? What did you think about the main event, Brock and Roman?
It was not good.
Like, really?
It didn't tell a good story. I know lots of people think the match wasn't that bad, but if you look at the match they had at, 31, and how it was similar in the fact that Reigns was getting his ass kicked, and he just kept being resilient and basically like saying, do it again, and then Brock kept suplexing him, and he kept getting up and smiling, there was not that same kind of tension. Like, there was not that same kind of chemistry. It felt like you're playing 2K, and you just had your finisher spam going on, because kicking out of 5 FIs for no reason Like, there was not enough space in between the moves to digest what was going on. And it felt like it was just really truncated and just really convoluted with what they were doing. And the crowd also being completely out of it probably hurt the at-home perception. But just looking at the way they paced out that match, it wasn't that good of a match. Like, I see why some people might have thought it was all right, but it really, compared to 31, it was garbage. So I know they can put on better matches, and that was not anywhere near it.
I felt so bad for both Brock and Roman for a couple of reasons. Number one, we had been building for a year up to that point where Brock Lesnar hits that F5 and Roman Reigns kicks out. And absolutely, positively, nobody gave a shit at all, at all. And the thing that irritates me the most is that I don't feel the fans even gave the match a chance. The fans had already decided in their minds that they just weren't going to be here for that match regardless. And the irony of the whole situation is that the guy that they didn't want to go over didn't go over. So they actually would have had the opportunity to go home happy had they not chose to try to hijack the show and just not sit there and enjoy the main event. Now, was this match as good as their Mania 31 match? Of course not. They beat the holy hell out of each other. And I think that match also benefited a lot from the atmosphere. It was outdoors. The sun was going down. It was almost like it was two gladiators fighting in the Roman Coliseum. But I thought this was a damn fine match, and I thought it was a WrestleMania main event worthy match. It just sucked because the crowd didn't give it a shot. I mean, these guys went out and they busted their ass. I mean, Roman Reigns got busted open, for Pete's sake, man. That was a interesting visual right there, just having him spear Brock Lesnar and Brock Lesnar having Roman's blood all over him. And Roman
was
looking, you know, with the proverbial crimson mask, if you will.
So let's put the bow on this one then. Out of 10, what would you have given WrestleMania 34 with your live bias?
See, I don't think I have a live bias because I also went back and rewatched the show on the network, too, because there was a couple of matches that I just kind of farted on. And then when I got home, I was like, OK, they were better. I would give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Much higher than mine, because I gave it a 4.5 out of 10.
Wow. That bad, huh?
Well, yeah, I gave it basically a point for every hour that was good.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
I guess now we can move on to question number 2.
Raw and SmackDown Live, after Mania, which one was better? And tell us all about your thoughts on the returns and call-ups post-WrestleMania.
Ooh, which one was better? So, all right, I'll hit that one out of the gate then. I'll say SmackDown was the better show. And my reasoning on that is because of the call-ups and the surprises. On Raw, they felt... It felt like color by numbers on Raw. It felt a lot like they did with Raw 25, where they just kind of phoned it in on this show. They're just like, all right, this is the point in which we're supposed to just debut people from NXT or returning stars. So let's randomly throw them out there, and it doesn't make any sense. So you get No Way Jose and his Adam Rose Congo line. And then you get Lashley, which arguably is the biggest pop and the biggest return or call up, so that was nice to see. AOP with that weird breaking away from Paul Elling thing, that didn't really work for me. And I don't know, like, everything about Raw, just it felt like another Raw just with these expected things just shoehorned in. So I think SmackDown was the better of the two. What about you, Platt?
I totally agree, man. SmackDown was the better show. Raw was the more memorable show just because of who showed up on it. I mean, you had AOP come up. I said that right. Thank you.
You had them did. Come good up. Job.
Oh, thank you. You had the return of Bobby Lashley, who I've been loving his work in TNA the past few years. I feel like he finally really honed in on his character. And if you don't book Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley for next year's Mania. Vince needs to get off the pipe, flat out, point blank, period. But I thought Raw was the more memorable just because of the call-ups, and I'm kind of not looking forward to the Superstar Shake-Up because the Raw roster right now is pretty stacked. It's lit. Samoa Joe came back. He talked that shit to Roman. He made a lot of solid points, and they always have good matches together. But overall, SmackDown was definitely the better show. I mean, you had the title change with Carmella. That was cool. You had the debut of what are the young ladies' names?
Well, they were the iconic duo.
Yeah, the iconic duo. Thank
but
you.
Now they're just the Iconics.
Okay, cool. They sound like a 80s glam rock band or a chick punk band. You know what I mean?
I'm okay with that.
Fair enough. I'll smoke a bag of that. And I mean, but I mean, for Pete's sake, man, we had the New Day versus the Usos and Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles. So for that alone, SmackDown is going to be the better show.
I agree there. All very solid points. Just to bring it back to what you were talking about with Raw and Joe. Now, I brought this up on Raw Reaction with Harry and Tony on Monday, so I'm curious what your take on this is. They weren't sure where they're going with Roman. When they sent Roman out, lots of people said, oh, they just sent him out there to die. He had nothing to say. He looked like a broken man when he was talking. Like, he looked like the shattered sex machine instead of the Samoan sex machine. Like, everything about him, his body language, his whole, I just read this on the internet that I have to face him again and whatever, I'll beat him eventually. Like, if you keep throwing him away, eventually I'll get one. And nothing about him had that cockiness from last year of, it's my yard, I retired the guy. He looked completely humbled. He looked like he had nothing left to give. I'm really waiting for him to, like, pull the Dante from Clerks and say, I'm not even supposed to be here today. Because, like, he just came off so sad. Where do you think they're going with that?
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, because that's one of the things that pisses me off about the Roman detractors, because this is such a nuanced character, and WWE doesn't typically do nuance well, but they've done it well in this instance. Also, he's been doing fire promos since the Cena feud. I'm sorry, it just is what it is. And everything that people hated about him, or the reasons that they specified why they didn't like him, all that's been shored up now. He's good on the mic. You know, he gives fire promos. He's obviously great in the ring. Nobody takes an ass whooping like Roman, and he's got that presence about him. That's an interesting thing that you bring up, though, Balls, but it plays in well. I mean, because everybody thought, if you play into not just the WWE universe, but also this bigger universe and this meta world that WWE kind of plays with now because of the internet and the smarks and this and that, it plays into all of that, because we all thought that that Sunday night was Roman Reigns' coronation, and he went out and got his ass whooped. So, you know, there's a lot, again, there's a lot of nuance there, and he played it perfectly. I really thought so. He played it absolutely perfectly. And then for Joe to interrupt him and to basically say what every single fan in the arena was thinking was also perfect. So I thought it was a really good segment. I didn't think he floundered. I think that was purposeful.
Yeah, and even when Joe hit that point of, for the last year you said you were going to be the one to beat him, and look at this, you failed. They panned over to Roman, and Roman literally had that look on his face that we've all had, just be like, dude, really? Like, you had to go there? Like what the hell? Like he had no comeback for it. He's just like, you have to rub it in, huh? Okay, thanks.
Yeah, like, that's that, like, yeah, you're right, but kiss my ass, and I want to slap the shit out of you now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So talking about the Raw main event with the main title picture, I suppose, let's skip over to the SmackDown main title picture. And I'll bring up real quick before I get to my good point. You were talking earlier about English and Shinsuke not being able to deliver that well. Heel Shinsuke played with the fact that English is his second language. Tell me that wasn't your favorite promo that Shinsuke's ever done.
Pop. I can't argue that whatsoever. That was awesome.
He punched me in the dick. Why? Why did he punch me in the dick?
That's not funny now, is it? Get the fuck off me!
Pop.
It's Shinsuke's new gimmick, everybody, because holy hell, that's kind of what it's turned into with him and AJ. Like, he's just, like, instead of knee to face, it's like uppercut to groin. Don't you think?
I absolutely love it. And I said it earlier, I am totally here for Heelsuke, man. It's funny because his character was a little bit of a cocky, not a little bit, he was a cocky SOB anyway. So if you turn that dial just slightly, he turns into a dick, pun intended. See what I did there?
I did. Yeah. Now someone's got to hit him. Boom.
So I'm here for it. So do you think within the next couple of months, Heelsuke does eventually capture the WWE title?
Oh, definitely. I think at this point, it's probably going to lead to a triple threat match with AJ, Daniel, and Shinsuke, probably at SummerSlam. Because you could definitely see him playing this whole AJ angle. Maybe Daniel Bryan interjects himself so that he gets a match against Daniel Bryan. And then you could have dream match after dream match for the next like 4 or 5 pay-per-views. And you know that if you put all three of them into a ring, nobody's going to phone that one in. I don't think that's possible to underwhelm with how hard Daniel Bryan works and how much he wants everybody to, you know, remember his return. And AJ would want to definitely, I guess, make people happy after a disappointing match, because he very much is the type to want to appease fans. So if this really gets as much negative blowback as the IWC started giving, then we'll see. But and Shinsuke can put on a clinic if you give him the space and the creativity too. So that would be fun. I would smoke a bag of that triple threat or random assortments of that. That would be really nice.
So you know the odds are we're probably going to get Daniel and Heelsuke on Tuesday night on SmackDown, right?
It probably is, but then I wouldn't be surprised if that ends in shenanigans or maybe. Right. Maybe Shinsuke hits him in the balls in front of the refs, so then it's just a DQ. So, you know, it just doesn't hurt anybody, and it just continues this whole vicious Shinsuke angle where he just cares about getting in his stuff and just hurting the other person instead of winning.
So you're just really all in on this balls angle, huh, balls?
Hey, I wonder why. Well, hey, you know, he hit AJ in the balls twice on SmackDown and once on Mania. So maybe that means next SmackDown it's 3 times. Maybe it's just, you know, like an exponential growth kind of thing.
Exponential growth? What are we talking about? Testicular cancer?
All right, so is that swelling cancer or did he just hit you too hard? Let's find out next time on SmackDown Live.
Hey, that's a good hook, though. That's a really good hook to tune back in. You know what I mean? We got Shane's hernia. We got Daniel's testicular cancer. Like, I like where we're going here, man. Right.
So you know Dr. What I mean? House is the special guest commissioner or something like that. Oh, God.
Yeah, maybe AJ can get a torn pectoral muscle or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. And then, and Paige is the new GM, and she's got the fucked up neck. Oh, there we go. It's just General Hospital SmackDown Live.
I was going to say MASH, but that might be too dated.
That is a little dated, even though we made that reference a few weeks ago when we, like, me and PC were dying. So, right. You have anything else to hit on these or no?
Shout out to Paige, by the way. I'm glad they found something for her to do. She is pretty good on the mic. It sucks that she can't wrestle anymore. But with Daniel Bryan coming back, anything's possible. But that's going to be interesting. That Plus, I like the dynamic of having a woman as the general manager as well. That should be kind of cool.
How do you feel about British general managers for 3 of the major programs? You got Drake, you got William, and now you got Paige. Is England taking over?
Tally ho. Oh, tally ho.
All right. Now, there goes any English viewers, listeners. God damn it. All right. Next question.
Hello, Governor. That was brutal.
Please, sir, I don't want any more. Next question, more. Mr. Moderator.
Is more.
Question 3, Alberto Del Rio, no shows, Lucha Underground / Impact event, WrestleMania weekend.
So we talked about this a little bit before the show. So apparently there was a press conference He was supposed to main event with, Austin Aries, Pentagon Jr., correct?
Well, wait, are you talking about the press conference now or the show?
Both.
The press conference was just for Redemption, so it was just supposed to be Austin and him. Okay. The match was the other luchadors.
Okay. I'm just going to say this. Alberto Del Rio is a throwback in every sense of the word. He's a legitimate badass. He's crazy as cat shit. And he reminds me, he would have fit in perfectly in the territory days of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Definitely. And even the early 80s. He would have fit in perfectly. I felt like he was born after his time. He would have been a bigger star back then than he is now.
I mean, I agree with all of that. But, and I may be over speaking my knowledge on things or how it actually is, but from what I've heard,
you do that every week, man. So don't let that stop.
No. I'm usually right. That's why. That's where the smugness comes from.
When you're never right, like you're right. Like
every time I speak, I'm right. That's how this works. You just haven't learned it yet.
Not
anyway.
You haven't learned.
Yeah. My point. You can bury it if you'd like to, or go from it. But still, that Mexico is very much like the territory days. Everything I've heard from Conan and other luchadors that have podcasts and have done stuff, and Vampiro, you know, that kind of ilk, they say that Mexico is very old school in that fact that people still get their shit in when they want to. If you do something to wrong them in the ring, they will shoot on you. It's very old school because I guess the money is not as lucrative down in Mexico, and the fame and the stardom is something people still claw for. Like, well, I guess more like 80s, 90s American pro wrestling, because that's when we know there was a lot of backstabbing with Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and all that other stuff. Plus, as you mentioned, the territory days. So I wouldn't be surprised if Del Rio is the way he is because he was brought up with that old Mexican luchador kind of mentality, because, you know, his father was in the business, his Dos Caras, and he probably learned from all of the older generation, like Dr. Wagner and, you know, Blue Demon and all them. So
don't forget,
I think
his uncle is Mil Máscaras, who was arguably the biggest star in the history of Mexico. So,
well, El Santo is the biggest one, but Mil Máscaras is up there. I agree with you. So yeah, that's a good point. I did forget that for a second, but I think that's the whole thing, is he was turned on to wrestling by all these older mentality, you know, luchadors, and I think that's just really rubbed off of him, and he hasn't gotten to that point where he can balance it.
Well, number one, I said arguably, Dick, so thank you for correcting me being a dude. Number two, it's hilarious because all of his out-of-the-ring exploits are so much more interesting and entertaining than anything that he's done within the realms of professional wrestling. If you could somehow tap into the crazy that is Alberto Del Rio out of the ring, he'd be one of the biggest stars in the world, bar none.
You're completely correct on that one, because his between fights overseas or fights in his restaurant or just random fights after MMA matches or whatever the hell it is, and all his wonderful Periscope videos.
Yeah, with Bonnie and Clyde. Yeah, the Bonnie and Clyde dynamic with him and Paige.
Exactly.
This dude is fascinating. He might just be the new most interesting man in the world. If I'm Alberto's people, I'm contacting Dos Equis today.
But now, do you think he's just radioactive when it comes to pro wrestling anymore, though?
That's a good question. That really is a good question, because you can make the argument, yes. But the thing is, it's pro wrestling, and he's also very, very good, and he does have name recognition, and he is a star. And he, if you've ever seen him in person, he carries himself like a star as well.
Oh, he does.
So, yeah, and he really is. So I don't think so, just because talent gets away with a lot of shit that other people just don't.
That's a valid point. I can't really argue that one. So I guess that brings up the last point of this whole situation. Do you think it's a shoot or a work? Because he did show up for the beginning of that press conference. Then Aries rubbed him the wrong way with comments and his old belt display. And then he left. And then it turned into this bigger deal. So do you think it's real?
I think it's a shoot. And the only reason I say that is because if it was a work, I could still see him showing up for the tag match. at Lucha Underground versus what is it? TNA Impact, OPP, ADD, OPP,
just Impact,
ORD, just Impact. Whatever. Whatever, it doesn't matter. If it was a work, I still would have saw him showing up in that match in some capacity. Not necessarily wrestling, but maybe he comes out to cost Austin or whatever the case may be. But seeing as how he no-showed that event as well, I'm leaning towards shoot. That may get worked into a work. Because you know how it is in wrestling. Even if something is a shoot, it eventually gets worked into the work anyway.
Oh, yeah, you're completely right. They could re-sign him or make it seem like it was all part of the plan. Yeah, you're right. But... who knows? I agree with you, though, that yeah. I think it's real, and it could become part of a storyline, but I don't even know. I don't think Anthem wants that kind of headache anymore, because this is the second time that they've kind of had to, you know, shoo him away, because there was that whole airport situation with him and Paige, where he was off TV for, like, 4 or 6 months or something like that, and now this, too. Like, I think he's burned his last bridge over there.
Maybe so, but you know, you never say never in professional wrestling. But if I'm Alberto, man, I just take my ass back to AAA and be a god.
True.
Yeah.
I can't argue there.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Next question.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Bumper.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
The Rainmaker faces an aerial assassin.
Good God Almighty.
In a monumental clash of champions.
A German suplex bridge.
Kazuchika Okada battles Will Ospreay at New Japan's 46th anniversary.
Get ready for more strikes than the PBA Tour.
Jim Ross and Josh Barnett have the call.
Playtime may be over.
Oh, what a dropkick.
All new New Japan Pro Wrestling. Friday on Access TV.
WrestleMania week and weekend was more than just WrestleMania. In the words of Paul Harvey, here's the rest of the story. Good day?
I kind of see where this is leading, where you would like us to talk about the other shows because it was more than just NXT and WWE. So, sure, let's do that. Yeah, surprisingly. Like, there was only like 9 billion shows down there at some point. Oh, my God. Like, good for them, though. They took advantage of the crowds, and there was a lot of good wrestling, too. Like, check out TheChairShot.com for my top 5 matches of the week, because it turned into a 6 to find something they like on there. But, so, a couple bullet points, I suppose, and then you could bring up whatever you want to, Platt, is... Zach
Sabre. Thank you, sir.
You know what I mean. I wasn't saying it like it was a gift. I said I'm just letting you know. I'm just gonna run through a couple points. Ah, shit. Try to be nice, I get yes. Salt water all the time. Point one, like that. That definitely helped Matt Riddle beat Zack Sabre Jr. So that was a good one. But no, yeah. So the Evolve title changed hands after 404 days. Zack Sabre Jr.'s, you know, his New Japan Cup run. Plus the match against Okada, he's had so much success, so much going on. It was bound that something would catch up to him, and Matt Riddle caught him. Then you had...
shout out to Matt Riddle, by the way, man. He won that title. He's going to be challenging for the MLW title. I think it's coming up at the end of this week. It's him and Shane Strickland. So that should be a pretty good match as well. So he might be a big winner coming out of this next couple of weeks.
That is a good point. Do you know if that's going to be filmed for MLW's flagship episode next week?
I believe it is, by the way, and I'm glad you said that, Balls, because it gives me an opportunity to do what I do best, which is put myself over, because I said not only on these airwaves, but also on Chairshot Radio, that MLW would have a television presence in 2018.
You are a genius, sir. What can I
say? I certainly am.
So... now to continue the bullet points of what happened this past weekend, the wonderful guest that was on Chairshot Radio a week or two ago, I forget exactly, but Mike Perro and his teammate Odinson, the team is The End. They defeated, or I should say, they won the 4-way tag match that involved the Evolve Tag Team Champions, but the caveat, unfortunately, was that the Evolve Tag Team Champions had to be involved in the finish, be it submission or pinfall, for the titles to change hands. That didn't happen. They actually pinned the one of the members of the Workhorsemen team. I can't remember exactly. It was a long weekend. But either way, they won the match. They didn't win the title. So there should be something coming soon where they're probably entitled to some kind of rematch or one-on-one. Then we had the Impact versus Lucha Underground match or show that was already referenced. Pentagon actually won the impromptu three-way between him, Phoenix, and Austin Aries. And was after that show, Aries decided to just make that the main event of Redemption since Del Rio no-showed and got fired. So we're going to see a take two of that. I think it's April 20th? 20th or 22nd is Redemption. I'm going to have to double-check that one for next week.
That should be good.
Oh, yeah. Pentagon, Phoenix, and Aries was really good for a thrown-together match that should have been a tag match. It barely missed my top five of the weekend, and you know that those guys are going to work their ass off. Pentagon is fantastic. Phoenix is fantastic. Those two would definitely make a big splash in WWE if they were to ever get the call to go there, because they've got that Rey Mysterio it factor. Like, they're fucking good. Interesting thing that happened there, though, and Platt, I want your opinion on this, because I know you don't watch Impact much, but Taya Valkyrie faced Allie for the Knockouts Championship, and on Impact TV, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, Taya has been undefeated. Taya got this random Knockouts Championship shot. Allie beat her clean. Do you think that's going to play into storyline, or was this kind of just an offshoot, like non-canonical kind of thing?
Well, seeing as how they tape 6 months in advance, we won't know until 2019. Now, will we?
We'll know after Redemption. Come on. You know what I'm getting at.
You know what I'm getting at as well.
I agree with you that it's ridiculous, their taping schedule, but, you know, they're trying to save money, and as long as people have jobs, I don't care.
No, I get that, and I can dig that, man, but hell, aren't they still showing EC3 on television?
No, he just got fired a week or two ago.
Oh, okay,
I think they just showed Lashley, though, so Lashley might get another week.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to know how this falls out for another month or two, to be honest with you.
Well, how do you feel? Do you feel this crossover event has any implications, or was it just done as an exhibition?
I think it's like when WCW did the thing with AAA, the Worlds Collide pay-per-view. Or was that New Japan? I can't remember. But the Worlds Collide pay-per-view that they had in the 90s, you know
Super
what I'm talking
show
about?
Show in like 93 in the Tokyo Dome, that one?
Was that what it was? It was a...
Japan Super Show.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get what you're saying. But they also weren't so heavily televised at the time, WCW, so... Do you think this hurts?
Neither is TNA, Impact, ColecoVision,
television. But
they're not highly televised.
You think this hurts Taya's mystique that they were building? Because I don't know if you've seen her enter, but she's got this, like, you know, she's like this Norse goddess. Like, she comes in with a crown and a robe, and they really play up the Valkyrie aspect of her last name. That she's just right out of Odin and the mythology.
I think it does, because it shows a chink in the armor. So I think that does take away a little bit from the mystique. And if you go throughout the history of winning streaks, if it's either be it Goldberg or hell, even Tatanka, like, you know, once that first loss,
Ludwig Borka.
But you see them lose, yeah, it does take away a little something.
Fair enough. And
Allie is awesome, by the way. She's flipping awesome. So that's not a bad L to have on your resume. She's awesome. I'm a fan.
Oh, no. The way they've built the character from Cherry Bomb, who was her indie character, and she's actually a good wrestler. And the fact that Allie started as this ditzy, flighty idiot who didn't know how to wrestle, and then you slowly saw the evolution, like, it was so beautiful. And people love Allie because she's such a bouncy, cheery, cute girl. So, like, there's nothing to hate about that character. And you're right, she's a legitimate wrestler, so it's not like it's a big L, like, you know, no. in the damage department.
Yeah, but, and I think this was just a one-off. It has nothing to do with the canon or anything like that. But you know how you all are. And when I say you all, I'm talking about you Smarks and you IWC Melon Farmers and Marks and this and that.
Self also.
Yeah, but, you know, I get buns, though, so that's different.
Jesus Christ.
I get consistent buns, so, you know, I'm doing something right. And she's not bad looking either.
All right. You got yourself a good one, Platt. Amber is definitely up there.
I did, man. Thank you. I'm not even going to bury her. I'm going to put her over. You're absolutely right, man. She is definitely my better half, in case she listens, because she listens now.
True. But still, Impact versus Lucha Underground was actually a good show. You could probably find it on their Twitch still, too. But that was fun. And, the other last one that I can think of that pops to mind is ROH Supercard of Honor. Which Ibushi and Hangman Page had a really good match, but that it was placed kind of early on, so that was a little awkward. But Kenny versus Cody, oh my god, I think you would love that match if you haven't seen it. It's a Cody match where it's an old school gimmick to shit Memphis kind of match where he comes down with a new guy in a bear suit, he comes down with Brandy, and Kenny tries to get in the work rate athletic nowadays kind of shit, but the gimmick aspect of Cody just won't let him wrestle a Kenny match. He has to wrestle his match. And there's just so many little nuances and little things, and it's just beautiful. And the way it ends with the Bucks trying to make a decision on whose side they're on, picking Cody as the one that they're going to like super kick and betray, but Cody ducks out of the way and instead they hit Omega. And Cody gets the win. Oh, nice. My God. It was great storytelling. Like, that is... The match itself, meh. But the storytelling was fantastic. And, oh, my God. Sadly, that wasn't the main event. So that totally killed the crowd and took the air out of Marty Scurll versus Dalton Castle. Which wasn't that good of a match anyway. Because when you're rooting around outside looking for powder under the ring for, like, two... like... I don't know who thought that was a good idea. Like, Marty is literally just walking around looking for his gimmick so they can do a spot instead of just changing the spot. Like, that was so painful. Oh, but no, Cody Kenny, did you get anything from that while you were down there?
I didn't see it. I heard people talking about it, and I talked to people about it, so I kind of got a feel for what happened. And I do want to go back, and I'm sure I can find it somewhere, YouTube or whatever.
I can shoot you a link.
I appreciate it, bro. Thank you, man. But, Balls, I'm not going to lie, man. That's the one thing that is still left on my WrestleMania bucket list. I need to hit an indie show, and I haven't done that yet. This year, to be honest, it was between going to an indie show or paying a dollar to watch my friend get whipped by a woman in pasties on Bourbon Street. I feel I made the right choice.
The dollar.
Yeah, I made the right choice, yes.
All of that sounds good. So, like, I can't see you there.
Yeah.
If you come to Mania next year, then we'll have to do something. We'll have to set something up because there's some good indie feds in Jersey and, you know, Brooklyn, New York kind of area. So there's some good stuff we can hit.
You know, the one that I want to hit, and I had an opportunity this year, but it was just too far away for me, is the Joey Janela show. He always does an indie show, and it typically starts after midnight, and the crowd is just drunk and rowdy and crazy. I know at the show in Orlando last year, he had my main man, Party Jannetty, there. And it just seems like a really cool show to be at, and the crowd is rowdy and drunk, and that's the one I want to hit, to be honest with you. Or one of the ones I want to hit. The only reason I didn't do it this year is because it was like 45 minutes away. We were in downtown New Orleans. We weren't on Bourbon. Our hotel wasn't on Bourbon Street. It was on Canal Street, which is literally right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't drive. We just Ubered from the airport and we didn't have a car. And I just didn't feel like making that trip. And again, pay for your friend to get whipped by a woman on Bourbon Street with pasties or an indie wrestling show.
No, you're right. And yeah. We'll just have to work that out, but that's definitely its bucket list thing, and it's on my bucket list to go to a Mania, and 35 is going to be at MetLife, so I've got absolutely no excuse not to go.
I'm so jealous because you're going to save so much bread, man, because it's in your town. Like, you could get, like, really good seats.
I mean, I'm not sure how much money I want to spend, so that depends.
Well, I'll put it to you like this, man. We paid $1.50, so we paid $300 for two seats, they were 100 level.
Did you guys get like early access or anything like that, or was that later?
No, we got them earlier than we normally get them because normally I got to pay for aftermarket tickets. So for the same price that we typically pay for nosebleeds, we got 100 level seats, which was pretty awesome. So shit. we got them a little bit earlier this year. I think we got our tickets in January, maybe.
Damn. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to look into that then.
So the best advice I can give you is to buy your WrestleMania package in increments. I mean, this doesn't apply to you because it's coming to your backyard. But we bought the hotel room back in, I think, like November or December. So it's like, okay, we got 6 months to figure out how to pay for it. Like that was the most expensive part of our whole trip. But we give ourselves 6 months to figure out how to pay for it. Then we got the tickets. And then we got the plane fare. I mean, it's only an hour and a half. We're only an hour and a half from New Orleans, so the plane tickets were nothing but $300. But it, just buy it in increments, man. That's what that's my recommendation.
Nice, nice. So
yeah,
there we go. There's a small bullet pointed review of things that aren't WWE umbrellaed. I guess we can go to the last question now.
Which is WWE umbrellaed.
Hey!
Listen up, pro wrestling fans. What do you get when you get the architect, the commissioner, and Mr. Velvet Pipes himself together? Oh, that's right. It's Chair Shot Radio. Make sure you check it out every Friday. TheChairShot.com. We don't want to get it wrong now, slap nuts.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
And next week we're going to have ourselves a good old superstar shakeup, because it's time to shake things up around here.
Yes, Vince, indeed, it is time to shake things up again. Gentlemen, who's going where?
I have no idea what's going to happen. I alluded to this earlier. I really don't want Raw to get shaken up because that roster is pretty lit right now. Obviously, there's going to be some moving and shaking. I would be surprised if Daniel Bryan didn't end up back on Raw just because it's the flagship show. Much like Chair Shot Radio every Friday on Chair Shot Radio Network. But TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. I could also see Seth Rollins going to SmackDown. I don't know why that just kind of seems like it makes sense logically for whatever reason. I could also see Finn Bálor going to SmackDown because that makes a lot more sense because that would kind of give him room to stretch his legs and become the top babyface on that brand, possibly. Other than that, Balls, I have no clue, man. What do you think is going to happen? And I can see Sasha going to SmackDown as well. But other than that, yeah, what do you think is going to happen?
Okay, so I guess let's look at it this way. I'll take a chick first, or a woman. Sorry, let's not be even marginally derogatory. I'm sorry.
Shout out to the 44%.
We love you. Anyway, I would rather see Bayley go to SmackDown, because I feel her gimmick would resonate more on a smaller quote-unquote stage, and maybe bring Becky over to Raw, where it's probably the better competition, because at least it's more visible, and they're always on screen. So you'd be able to see Becky maybe try, maybe get a win here or there, maybe get something, instead of kind of being swept under the rug like she has been for the last year. And as for the men, if you bring Seth Rollins over to SmackDown, which I don't hate, but do you think that gender would resonate on Raw? Because you can't bring the IC to SmackDown without moving the US back to Raw.
That's true. That's a good question. That's a really good question. You got a point, because yeah, if you're going to bring Seth, obviously you got to bring gender or whomever is the US champion over to Raw. I don't know, man. I'm having a really difficult time picturing gender on Raw. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I really am.
No, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. So
that was just taking your, you know, stream of consciousness and seeing how you felt if I flipped it. So yeah, so I think the gender caveat's odd. So I think we might just see Dean Ambrose back on SmackDown for when he gets back, if it's not really a huge setback that the rumors are saying. I think Ambrose by default goes over there, because I guess maybe Reigns too, but then that makes that whole Universal title situation weird, because that title is red, and yeah. if you move Reigns over, you're kind of telegraphing that he might win, or you're telegraphing one thing or the other. You're telegraphing he's losing if you don't move AJ, and you're telegraphing he's winning if you move AJ, which then makes the whole Shinsuke thing stupid.
Yeah, I can't see. If Reigns ends up on SmackDown, that's Vince saying he's basically given up on the experiment. And Vince is a hard-headed son of a bitch, so I don't see him giving up on the Roman Reigns. And, I mean, Reigns is over. You can't say he's not over. He gets booed out of every building. That's over. It's a thin line between love and hate. Love and hate are the exact same thing. They're two sides of the exact same coin. So you can't say he's not over. That's another one that the smarks say that pisses me off. How's he not over? And he's getting booed out of every flipping building he's in.
Because they think over is positive. That's the only way they look at the word over.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, so, okay. Another thought. Just throw it out to you. The New Day. Do you split them up?
Yeah, because the gimmick has ran its course, man. When you got when you come out to WrestleMania with short stacks carrying short stacks. As a matter of fact, the New Day has officially jumped the shark, and we're not even going to call it jumping the shark anymore. We're going to call it
the pancake.
Short stacks.
Jumping the short stacks. Okay. Yeah, I thought this whole pancake thing was basically jumping the shark. Like they need to take some time away from the gimmick. Maybe bring it back in a couple years, but I think they need some space. And Big E moving over to Raw, he could be a big, big threat over there. Or shit, even if you move Kofi, because then he has access to 205 Live. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Maybe you give him a little more room to breathe in 205 where they're his size. He can maybe get a nice title run out of it or something like that and try to re-legitimize him because he has a lot of tag team accolades. But as a solo, like, what's he really done?
Multiple-time Intercontinental Champion, multiple-time U.S. Champion.
You know what I'm getting at? They're all the forgettable times when the U.S. and the Intercontinental didn't mean shit.
Kofi Kingston has, like, 8,655 title reigns, man.
Yeah, and Raven's got, like, 24 hardcore championships or something like that. That means about the same.
Well, we don't believe you. You need more people.
Well, look up the stats, Jack. But I would like to see Kofi and Xavier Woods. I could see them being a really cool, fast, smaller tag team in the vein of the Rockers or the Rock and Roll Express or even Kendricks and who's his partner's name, whatever his partner's name was. Thank you. I could see them in that vein. I would love to see Big E move over to Raw and get a push. The only thing is, you know how this works in WWE with big black guys. They end up jobbing out to whoever the new guy is that Vince gets enamored with. They just run through all the blacks.
You just brought up a perfect point. I guess you can't move Big E because Lashley's on Raw.
Ah, touche.
But do you have to move Xavier just so that you avoid the obvious chance and bullshit that's going to come because Paige is the manager?
Ooh, I think you have to, because that's going to be kind of awkward, I would presume.
Okay, I mean, I'm trying to, like, add some logic to this whole thing.
I get that, and with that being said, I could also see the Usos moving to Raw, which hopefully would also bring Trinity, or Naomi, as y'all know her, over to Raw as well.
Didn't they win that match, though, to get the shot at the Bludgeons?
Yeah, but who cares, man? That's in 2 weeks.
I'm just saying. You know,
I mean, they're going to lose. You do know that.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
No, and I think the Usos have been working hard, man. They deserve to get called up to the big time.
So then you think they do the whole bloodline thing again with Roman?
That'd be cool, but I don't think so. I think they want to kind of keep Roman out there by himself for a little bit.
No, it's perfectly fine. I don't disagree with that. I was just trying to throw something else out there, because if Roman does this whole shattered gimmick and doesn't win in Saudi Arabia, then that would be interesting, because it's basically like Roman loses his smile kind of thing. You know what I mean?
They tried this a few years ago. You remember after the first Rock and Cena match, and that was the storyline they were trying to tell, and they just did a horrible job of telling it, because he loses to Rock and he's feeling a certain way, and then he goes out and beats Brock Lesnar the very next month.
But Cena's not believable when he does it, because, like, his whole face, he just looks like a smug prick. It's like if I was trying to be humble for 5 seconds. Like, it just doesn't resonate. Like, but Roman's got really good facial expressions, and his body language, everything. Like, did you not see a broken man in the ring on Monday when you watched Raw?
Number one, I'm glad you said it, because it was literally on the tip of my tongue. And number two, I agree with you. That's a fair point.
I figured that was on the tip of your tongue because I saw you trying to, like, starting to smirk. So I'm like, okay, let me say it before you bury me harder than I'm going to bury myself.
So I was under the impression that Roman was going to go ahead and win this steel cage match versus Brock at the Saudi Arabia event, which I'm very much looking forward to, by the way. It just, the idea of watching wrestling at 12 noon just sounds really flipping cool to me. So I'm looking forward to that.
It does sound awesome.
Right? But the thing is, and DeMarco retweeted this. He retweeted somebody saying that Brock Lesnar was technically, I think it was 2 months away from breaking CM Punk's record as the longest reigning world champion. And we talked about this off air. And you know how petty Vince is. And we've been down this road before. You remember when Brock was the youngest world champion, and then he left under less than amicable terms. I know I screwed that word up, but whatever. And then he gives the belt to Orton. Now he's the youngest. You see it with the demolition.
No.
Hold on, two
sides of a different coin. One's WWE, one's world.
Okay, anywho, you see the New Day or Demolition was the longest reigning champs. All of a sudden, they've got a lawsuit against Vince. True. And now New Day is the longest reigning champs. Hell, even CM Punk's wife, AJ Lee, she was the longest reigning women's / divas champion. She leaves when her contract is out to go stand by her man. And now all of a sudden, what is it? Is it Nikki Bella is now the longest reigning women's champion of all time?
I believe it is, but that's also because she's with Cena, so that can be seen either way.
That's fair, but I think I've proven the point that Vince has a track record of being extremely petty. So I wouldn't be surprised if he stretched that out for another 2 months.
Yeah, but that's not even the same belt.
You know they do verbal gymnastics when it comes to these sort of things, man. You know, they said Asuka had never lost in NXT, even though she had lost some triple threats in tag matches, man.
Change the narrative however they feel. Yeah. But you can't... Well, Punk is known as a 434-day WWE champion. This is the Universal Championship, so, like... it's a little harder to change the narrative there unless they bring the belts together at some point soon.
Is it though?
I mean, I think it is though.
You know,
the universe and the world ain't the same. Like, I get what you're saying, and it could be. It sounds like a stretch and a half. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair. So did Brock leaving Mania with the belt though?
I mean, okay, touche.
I'm just saying that's just something to put into the back of your head and let it marinate, and we'll see how it plays out.
I think that's a good spot to stop at, you know, giving people something to chew on and marinate with until next week.
Hey, man, I'm not the MVP for nothing, baby. Why don't you let the good folks see where they can find you?
You can find me on the Twitter at IWCWarChief. And as I always say, if you have complaints, comments, anything, whatever, send pictures of Mania parties, send pictures of that stripper with the tassels whipping people or whatever she was, you know, hit me up at AndrewBelez@thechairshot.com. You want to tell him where you are, Platt?
It was awesome, by the way, because the first, so she gave him 10. I paid 10 for one. I think I was actually supposed to pay $1 for each swaddle, but I don't know. It didn't work out that way. So she had an actual whip for the first 8. And then the last 2, she pulls out this huge-ass wooden paddle and just lets him have it. It's awesome. I'm going to have Amber send me the video, man, and see how it comes out. And maybe I'll send you the video because it's great.
That's awesome.
It was. But you can find me at The Real C Platt on Twitter. And guys, ladies, gentlemen, fans, marks, whatever you are, don't forget to go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot to get the first hot off the presses, new Chair Shot t-shirts. Please do. Please and thank you. Please support us. And again, man, you can say, hey, I had them. I was with Chair Shot before it was cool. So come on, potheads or warheads or whatever name that we end up settling on. Come holler at us, man. ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. PC Tunney, where can they find you, bro?
At PC Tunney and at Chairshot Radio.
Cool. So, there's a lot going on in the wild, wacky, wonderful world of professional wrestling as we embark on the new WWE season. New Japan's about to heat up. Who knows what's going on with Impact, Ring of Honor, MLW is about to have a television presence. This is awesome. And we're so glad that you took some time out your busy schedule to spend it with us yahoos. So for Andrew, don't fall, call me Snowflake Balls Blast. For the commish, PC Tunney, I'm Christopher Platt. Until next time, shalom. Hit it, Carly.
Strategically